I'm Al Filreis, and this is Poem Talk at the Writer's House, where I have the pleasure of convening three friends in the world of contemporary poetry and poetics to collaborate on a close but not too close reading of a poem. We'll talk, maybe even disagree a bit, and perhaps open up the verse to a few new possibilities, and we hope gain for a poem that interests us some new readers and listeners. And I say listeners because Poem Talk poems are available in recordings made by the poets themselves as part of our PennSound archive, writing.upenn.edu/PennSound. Today I'm joined here in Philadelphia in our third floor garret studio of this 1851 cottage called the Kelly Writer's House by Frank Sherlock, author of Over Here, Factory School 2009, a new book, and co-author of Ready to Eat Individual, Lavender Ink 2008, and other books, his duet with C.A. Conrad entitled The City, Real and Imagined Philadelphia Poems is due out in the fall of 2009. And by Fran Ryan, a longtime friend and affiliate of the Philly Sound scene, a poetry-minded historian who teaches at Moravian College and whose intellectual passions are labor history, oral history methods, public workers, the figurative and actual detritus, well, I don't know about actual detritus, of daily life as it's actually lived. And by Tom Devaney, poet, teacher, essayist, Jeffersonian, and Edgar Allan Poean, a truly great reviewer, longtime producer of a monthly literary radio program on XPN, whose most recent book of poems is A Series of Small Boxes. Welcome back, all of you, especially to you, Fran.
Thank you.
Whom I haven't seen in a long time.
Good to see you again.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
How are things at Moravian?
Things are really good. Bethlehem's a nice town. I miss Philadelphia, though.
Do you live in Philly or Bethlehem?
I live in Bethlehem right now.
Great. So you're commuting today.
Yes.
Our poem today was written by the late Sid Corman, one of Corman's many, many, many short poems. It's called Enuresis, E-N-U-R-E-S-I-S, and PennSound's Corman page has two recordings of him performing the poem. The second of these was part of a reading he gave here for the people of the Writer's House over the telephone from his home in Kyoto, Japan. The date of that extraordinary event was November 19th, 2001. So here now is Sid Corman introducing and then reading Enuresis.
You can see that my poems are very immediate and direct, and nobody really has to explain them to you. This one is called Enuresis. Probably few of you know. This is a scientific word, term, for bedwetting. Ed here is George Evans. That was a nickname of his. George is one of the finest poets in America today, but very few people know it. And he's written the strongest stuff about the Vietnam War, which he was involved in, though he never killed anybody. Terror is not Ed sitting in one's piss. I know. I've sat there, I've slept there, and did most of my childhood. That was warmth, in fact, and comfort, in spite of the unconcealed, unconcealable smell. Terror? That was, and always will be, mother cursing dad. And there I am, alone in that night, hearing that door slam.
So what kind of terror? There are two terrors, two different kinds of terrors here, I think. What kind of terror is this, Fran?
I remember that night that Sid read here over the phone, and I remember it being just right after 9/11. And, you know, the way that I was thinking at that time was there was this overwhelming sense of terror that a lot of us felt and continue to feel. But the thing about Sid and hearing his voice right now, it's the first time I've heard his voice.
Since
that night.
Really?
And it's how grounded Sid, to me, always was in his body. You know, his poetry is about life and its hardships, not just its joys, you know, and that's something that the terror that I get from that reading. You know, I don't feel terror when I actually listen to that.
It's interesting that you would hear a post 9/11 sense of terror in his voice, because this is a poem he liked to read. Yeah. This was one of his own sort of anthologized poems. But I think you're right. The a poem beginning with the word terror in November 2001, spoken by essentially an exile from, probably an economic exile from America. Uh-huh. Sounded like it was a disembodied critical voice.
Yeah.
Did you, Frank, also, did you hear terror in the post 9/11 sense in the poem?
I have to say, I thought of it more in a Vietnam sense, in mm-hmm. terms of as related to George Evans
right.
and
right.
and his writings, his book Sudden Dreams, which
right.
deals a lot with the fear mm-hmm. involved with his experience in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Tom,
well, going off of what Frank just said about, you know, invoking George Evans, it's a kind of conversation poem between Sid and George. It seems to me like you hear Sid's voice change in the intonation. He's like, I know, I've sat there. And so it's like, what is terror?
Well, even before that, Tom, he's
right.
saying, terror is not Ed sitting in one's piss. Now, that could mean, I'm speaking to you, Ed. This is a poem that's a rejoinder to you, who writes of terror as, I'm assuming, you know, scared shitless in a foxhole, peeing in your pants out of fear. Let's say it's a wartime fear. No, I know. He reverses directions as if to say, I do know that fear, that terror, and it's different for me. Go ahead, Tom. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
So they're kind of figuring out what the terror is. Like, there's like this conversation, and then it, on the page, you know, there's one thing, but hearing Sid read, it's so dramatic and so
insistent.
Insistent. Mm-hmm. I know, I've sat there, and then it's there's a surprise about what the poem actually saying fear is, in a sense. Because,
and what is the poem saying fear is? I know this is sort of jumping to the punchline, but what's, according to Sid Corman, what is the fear? It's not peeing in your pants.
It's mom cursing dad.
Yeah. It's the, I assume, sort of violence, metaphorical or actual, of the family.
Terror is not Ed sitting in one's piss. I know. I've sat there. I've slept there and did most of my childhood. That was warmth, in fact, and comfort, in spite of the unconcealed, unconcealable smell.
I think it's interesting in Sid's introduction, though, he talks about how George Evans never killed anybody. He makes a point of that. So is he identifying with him in the sense of his mom and dad, you know, is that some big
without
Cold
that,
War?
Frank, that introduction, without that, would be entirely unremarkable mm-hmm. and wouldn't leave the poem open. Because he says that, I'm scratching my head. Because in a way he's saying, George Evans was a soldier and he peed in his pants and he did what soldiers do in order to do the violence that you're supposed to do in war. But then he turns out to be this sort of peacenik, or a guy who was so peaceful he couldn't shoot, or couldn't shoot straight. Or so what do you do with this? This kind of makes it difficult.
Well, that, for me, it takes like mother and dad into this whole other context. Like I'm saying, are these the two Cold War forces where he is just this child sitting in his own piss waiting for it to be played out?
So Vietnam becomes an analogy for a domestic version of the same terror, the same violence?
Or maybe, yeah, or Sid's identification with how he perceives that George Evans's Vietnam situation.
He's trying to identify, and he's using a home front way of identifying with the terror of war, I guess, in a way. Fran?
I remember the first time I heard this poem. It was, I'd been reading Sid's work since the late or even early 80s, and I met with him once in
Japan.
Well, no, it was actually he visited his sister just outside Washington, D.C. in 1995. It was actually right after I met Frank, and I remember he read this poem to me. I'd never read it before, but it struck me when we decided this is the poem we're going to talk about, that it was a poem that Sid wanted to read to me. And when I did read it, I mean, to have a personal kind of reading with Sid was amazing. It was one of the great moments, you know, of my life, really. I mean, that Sid read, you know, a number of poems, but this one, it struck me I'd never read it before. And I didn't even think of it in terms of terror, you know, like he was, I didn't know who Ed was. He didn't tell me who it was, George Evans. And Sid talked a lot and wrote a lot in his correspondences about his family. But it was almost he was inviting you into his family in so many different ways that the poem itself, it just struck me that Sid didn't really have barriers or walls, that your family was his family as well. He kind of reached out in a way. In fact, he signed his letters often, he always signed it Love Always at the end. And even early on in our relationship with Sid, Sid wrote letters to many poets over the years, we would come to Sid. It almost was an inclusion in the family.
Well, I deliberately introduced Fran Ryan in this show using the word detritus. I don't actually know, since you write about garbage workers, so yeah. I just threw detritus in there because it's a fun way of introducing you. But I had in mind the piss and shit quality. I mean, you used the word grounded for Sid, and I'm not saying he's just scatological all the time, but there's something bodily about so much of what he does, and it's so basic, especially later. Sid would not like a Freudian reading of his poems, but he invites a question of the child's family romance problem of the mother and father, not romance in the happy love sense, but in the drama, storm and stress sense. And here you have the idea of piss and shit. We're supposed to learn to give it up to be civilized and to be part, potty training in the Freudian sense, is a way of coming to terms with civilization, saying, the parents want me to put it in the hoop, so I put it in the hoop. But here's someone holding on to it as a safety against the violence of a world that's not so far external to him. In fact, his parents are causing it. The one that doesn't have to go to Vietnam to pee in your pants. Peeing in your pants becomes a way of never being civilized. And I don't know Sid as well as the three of you do, but I would say in a way that he's always saying, I don't think I want to be civilized. I want to hold on to the power closest to my body, even if it means I smell. Fran, you're Mr. Detritus. How do you respond to this
Mr. Detritus.
generalization?
The thing about this is that, Sid doesn't like to have much read into his work. He took pride in being able to read to second and third graders and have their faces light up as they do. Whenever I read Sid, I try not to analyze it very much. It's a very direct poem. The idea of what you mentioned about the waste and all that. The thing I learned most from Sid over the years, I think, was that the human condition. He once told me that the hardest thing you will ever do is that you will live your life. And I learned from Sid in a way that, life is not meant to be easy. And I find myself, now that Sid's gone, is it 10 years now? Or almost? No, 5 years that Sid's gone. I go back to him more and more as I find how complex life is and find solace in Sid's work.
Tom, go ahead.
I just wanted to follow up with Fran's last point. The complexity of life also gets kind of, I think it's getting revealed through your investigation, even though he's the there's a communication behind the clear-eyed, clear, speech of the poem, and it goes beyond even the syllable by syllable carefulness of Sid. It's such a powerful ending here. That was always will be mother cursing death. It's like this trauma, this just like elemental trauma is just like something. It's just he's living with it, and the poem just, it's so powerful.
And the way he reads it, he slams the door.
The verse, the slamming of the door, the poem just continues on past the poem when it's finished. And that's what I mean beyond, it goes beyond Sid's own telling us that it's just very simple, very direct, anybody can get this. I don't know, I think you have to live a few years to kind of feel this poem.
Terror? That was and always will be mother cursing dad. And there I am alone in that night hearing that door slam.
I think because we're all Cormanites or Cormanians or something, we're all taking for granted something that's fairly daring in this poem, politically and ethically, which is to say to someone, assuming it's George Evans and assuming it's a war kind of context, which I think Frank's right in assuming, this is daring, this is audacious, saying, you were in war and you were in a foxhole and you peed in your pants. I know what that's like. I was a kid whose parents argued. Mm-hmm. That's audacious.
It really is.
It's audacious. And I think Corman would say, Sid would say, well, it's true. I know terror because I sat for nights and days because my parents hated each other. And that's why I understand Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Take it from there. Anybody? Mm-hmm.
That's a great point. Let's not forget, you know, his term living, dying, one word, was something, you know, it has the book by that title. But it's a phrase that he uses, or a term that he uses again and again, that is the condition that we are. We're living, dying, you know. And I don't think that he sees the soldier's experience as somehow different than what all humans must do. The hardest thing you will do is you will live your life. And that's for everyone.
Tom, you were going to say something.
I wanted to say something about the poem, just because I've been reading a lot of Sid's poems just to get ready for this conversation. And just the fact that there's like an Asian consciousness that he gleaned from Pound, which is like, you know, pretty clearly documented. He says it. And not just the Asian consciousness from Pound, but the fact that he lives in Japan. He's a kind of scholar. But then, like Philip Whalen, Sid is utterly kind of an American poet. And it comes out in the tone. And so it's amazing to be immersed.
Which tone? The cocksure, you can't get one over, pull one over on me tone?
The tone is fused, this kind of spare tone that you get in certain haiku poets. And then this sort of blunt, and it comes out most emphatically in the reading. It's colorful, it's dynamic. But, you know, how he pushes into words when he's reading.
Yeah, I heard that. I hear that too. I don't know what you mean by Asian consciousness, though. Aesthetic that comes from what Sid learned from that time.
Pound's, you know, working with Fenollosa on right. The translations, the right. River Merchant's Wife. Like, I think sure. those are really central to Sid's work, and sure. I mean, at least his coming up, mm-hmm. where he took it is very different, and you know, it goes into like you know your friend and our friend Joe Massey. People who are kind of continuing this, using that tradition to do something in another tradition.
Yeah.
And also, you know, succinct parable, open-ended parable-like poems that get you, lead to head-scratching, you know, that sort of quality that he knew that Pound loved.
Well, it's Williams, too. I see Williams, William right. Carlos Williams in this. Obviously, we all do. I mean, it's an aesthetic that comes from the conversation, like you mentioned, Tom, a conversation poem. It is also not just to you know, George Evans, but to everyone reading it. The poem is yours or no one's is one of the things that Sid used to say.
Terror is not Ed sitting in one's piss. I know. I've sat there, I've slept there, and did most of my childhood. That was warmth, in fact, and comfort, in spite of the unconcealed, unconcealable smell. Terror? That was, and always will be, mother cursing dad. And there I am, alone in that night, hearing that door slam.
Sid Corman was felt underappreciated. I think he felt that he had done a tremendous amount of poetic work and wasn't well enough known. Sometimes I think he said it directly and sometimes he implied it. Do you all think that that's true, that he's underappreciated, that he needs to be brought back into the modernist mainstream? I don't mean mainstream so much as convention, but you know, he should be part of the modernist canon. What do we miss if we don't include Sid Corman in conversations about modern contemporary poetry?
Well, I think we miss a lot. One thing that gets not very much recognition is his translations, for instance. Right. But besides that, his editorial work with Origin and Sid is underappreciated. He was removed geographically, in a sense, from the new American poetry, but also removed himself, in all fairness, in his dealings, difficult dealings with a lot of folks.
And yet he was, many young poets found him. I mean, you right. three
seeked
are.
Seeked him out, yeah.
There's, John Taggart was another one of his friends and young poets who wrote to him. John has mentioned that he calls Sid the great encourager, and I think that is a historic role that Sid plays, that for all of us, even when he gave criticism, Sid was an encourager. He told us that we could do what we hope to do and gave us, I mean, think about it. The thing that I find amazing about this is that I came to Sid through the U.S. and Japanese mail service. You know, this predates email. That's how, you know, this is something that we've lived through, this transition. And I think about that movie El Postino that came out of who was the poet who was in there? What was
Neruda?
That? Neruda, yeah, about his relationship with his postman. The simple delight that I received, those little blue letters that Sid would send airmail from Japan.
Aerograms.
They were an incredible source of joy for me as a young poet.
Frank, did I see you with one of those aerograms earlier?
Oh, yeah. Thanks,
Frank. Would you pull it out and read a sentence or two that's
sure.
of interest?
If this is actually Fran's aerograms.
Yeah.
But the great part about them is they would have a poem on the outside. So you would have your address and then a poem. Like this one's a three-line poem. And the poem is... Can I read this?
Yes, please.
Okay. The prose. Tell me, would they have dedicated their lives to golf without the dough? And then you open it and there's your letter.
Yeah.
I just wanted to follow up one more thing about Sid's reputation. It's also, there's a kind of an awareness of, a growing awareness of Sid through his work with Nitaker and then the younger poets like, you know, Frank Sherlock and Joe Massey and Fran Ryan and other people who are you know, acutely kind of open to what Sid had to teach them. I didn't know Sid directly, just for the record. I knew him secondhand. But I did, you know, I knew Carl Rakosi, who talked about Sid and mm-hmm. who Sid wrote about very perceptively and incisively. And that's another thing why Sid will continue to sort of endure, because he wrote about so many other poets so well.
Before we get to the Gathering Paradise segment of our show, let me ask each of you to offer a brief final word on this poem, or maybe something more on what you get from it. Who wants to have a final word? Fran?
Well, I'm glad you picked this poem, because it's one that I sometimes forget in the various poems that I love by Sid. You know, it's funny. I do have very early memories as well, similar kind of memories like this, sensual memories of being a child. And, you know, Sid does have a special way to kind of connect life in all of its ways, as great poets do.
Frank?
Right, I think, Frank, you just said the word that brings it home for me, which is connectivity, this idea that terror or in another way, heroism or fear is not, you know, for the soldiers or for the big players, but it's all of us share in that. So, yeah, and this poem reminds me of just that.
Tom?
And the thing that I kept thinking about reading this poem is that so many of Sid's poems work on a kind of a syllable-to-syllable level. But really, the poem is of a piece, and it's the total impact of the overall poem that's the poem. And the syllables are all there, and they're all right, but it's the full package.
Thank you. We'd like to end Poem Talk with a minute or two of Gathering Paradise, a chance for several of us to spread wide our narrow hands to gather a little something really poetically good, to hail, commend someone, or something going on in the poetry world. Who wants to gather a little paradise? Frank.
I'll gather a little paradise.
All right, please.
I would like to encourage everyone to look for Joseph Massey's Areas of Fog by Shearsman Books. Joe Massey was a correspondent with Sid Corman, and Sid put Joe in touch with Fran and I, and Fran Ryan and I had the recent pleasure of helping keep Joseph Massey out of jail to continue to push his book.
Really?
So
okay.
Well, we
that's,
don't want to take
sure
too much
a story,
credit.
Story just, behind
but
that.
That's yeah, that's for the Joseph Massey show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But let me just end that with a line that Sid ended a letter to Fran Ryan, and the noise takes over readily.
Very nice. This
good segue for me.
It's real paradise there.
Yeah.
Fran?
Well, a couple things. A poet that I recently met whose work I really like is Carol Mirikoff. And I kind of suggest, if you haven't checked her out, to read her work. But also, in any conversation about Sid's work, I also want to mention Bob Arnold, who was very close to Sid, and who was someone who his own work, I think, also deserves a wider reading.
And so, who runs a press.
Exactly.
Partly Longhouse, dedicated to keeping Corman in print.
Longhouse Press. And if anyone needs to find work by Sid, which is a fear of mine that it might become harder, Bob Arnold is who to be in touch with.
Excellent. Well, that's all the urination we have time for on Poem Talk today. Poem Talk at the Writer's House is a collaboration of the Center for Programs in Contemporary Writing and the Kelly Writer's House at the University of Pennsylvania and Poetry Foundation, poetryfoundation.org. Thanks to my guests, Frank Sherlock, Fran Ryan, and Tom Devaney, and to Poem Talk's director and engineer, James Lemaire, and to our editor, Steve McLaughlin. This is Al Filreis, and I hope you'll join us again soon for another Poem Talk.